You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Well, folks, it's time for the main event of tonight's live broadcast, this Saturday evening, August the 18th, as we come to you live from AM 1600 WMQM Radio in Memphis, Tennessee, going out to the AM-FM affiliate stations of the Liberty News Radio Network, simulcasting online, of course, as you know, and archives will be available just minutes after tonight's show is over. But our featured guest tonight is Ayla Stewart. This is a young lady that I've been following for a while, making her debut appearance tonight. For those of you who may not be familiar with her, Ayla is a Christian wife and mother of six children. That in and of itself is cause for a hearty round of applause. But in addition to that, she is a writer, speaker, and author who focuses on sharing her experiences of overcoming feminism. She works to preserve traditional heritage and values within Western civilization, and you can find out more about her by visiting her website, wifewithapurpose.com, wifewithapurpose.com. Ayla, welcome to the show.
Hello, thanks for having me.
Well, you're very welcome. You're very welcome. I have got, this is, as we just mentioned, a debut appearance for you, and there's a lot of ground I want to cover tonight. There's never enough time, or never as much time as you think there is in an hour of commercial broadcast radio, so there's quite a wide variety of questions I want to present to you so the audience can get to know you as best they can in this short amount of time available to us. But let's start, of course, with your conversion from a liberal feminist to a traditional, a trad mother. How does that happen? What was your journey like?
Well, it's a really long story, and it didn't happen overnight. It was kind of a process, I would say, of about 5 years total. But it was, I went to graduate school in San Francisco, and that was a huge wake-up call for me regarding feminism and the way it really viewed the family. Now, I've always wanted to be actually a traditional wife and mom. I wanted to get married and have children. I actually had some issues first being able to have children, so I kind of got started a little later than I wanted to, and really quite literally to kind of kill time before I had kids, I decided to go to college and got a bachelor's and then decided to go on to get a master's, mostly just because I could. And once I was in that program and I had had one child and was pregnant with my second while I was going through my master's degree, I saw how what I'd been told my whole educational career about feminism and about it being, oh, it's just about a woman's right to choose whether she wants to be a working mom or a homemaker or this or that, was for the most part total rubbish, and that it was getting worse in the younger generations of feminists. Some of the older feminists still did hold on to that ideal of like, well, we just want a woman to be able to choose. And I even had some older professors who quite liked my lifestyle of being a stay-at-home mom and considering that a feminist option, but most of my younger peers did not. And I saw the reality going from just kind of a residential upbringing in the Southwest of the U.S. and then going to San Francisco and really seeing what happens to communities when they are completely inundated with liberal ideology, both at, you know, from everything from the family level, the individual level, all the way through the political level, and seeing the absolute havoc that wreaks on an area in every sense. Everything from just, you know, basic maintenance and dilapidation to individuals having, you know, serious mental health issues that I didn't see coming from, I grew up in a very residentially conservative area, and I didn't see that at all. And so I had this huge contrast, and that began my waking up process. And then when I was going through my graduate program, which was on women's theology, I decided to focus on two very conservative communities in America, the Amish and the Mormon community. And I did my thesis on those two communities. And I really, with a lot of my contemporaries there in that liberal program, I had to fight to be able to talk about women's issues from a traditionalist perspective. And I really understood that that was not something that they wanted to allow. Feminism did not want women to be able to choose to stay at home and do the things I had done, like home birth and breastfeeding on all of that, they'll give lip service to it. But when it gets down to the nitty gritty, when it gets down to the reality of it, they were shaming me daily for the choices I was making. And so that got me on this journey where I was, being a theology-based program, I was studying world religions at the same time and kind of really scrutinized every religion, you know, every major religion in the world, and really found that Christianity was the only one that held up to intense scrutiny, and kind of left that program after 2 years, really feeling like I need to be a Christian. This is the only thing that makes sense. It's the only thing that has real value and really holds up. And so those two processes kind of kicked off my journey. And so I went from being kind of a Green Party liberal into more of a libertarian, and then conservative libertarian, and then closed borders conservative libertarian, and then, you know, just kind of kept sliding, you know, right. And having more children, which of course just changes your whole outlook on the world. I think especially once you get past two kids, it's a really different lifestyle. It becomes your whole lifestyle. You can't put it off the way maybe you can a little easier when you only shuffling a couple of kids around. And so I was really in it 100% full time, 100% committed. And because of that, I had to acknowledge the realities of the world, and the realities of the world were conservative and they were Christian.
This is a fascinating, inspirational, and uplifting story. I think in some ways, even more so had you just followed the beaten path from your childhood and formative years all the way through. And certainly it's great when people are able to do that. But for you to have this transition from, as you put it, feminist to traditional mother, and certainly much more than that for people who are familiar with your work, which we'll get into in just a moment. But let me ask you this, Ayla. We're coming up on our first break here in about a minute's time. But what do you think your life would have been like had you gone through with what society commanded you to do or was pressuring you to do rather than listening to your heart's longing and your maternal instinct?
Oh, I would be a wreck. I would be divorced. I maybe would have had a couple of kids. They'd be amazingly screwed up, most likely. And I'd be feeling like a huge failure. I'm going to be 40 next year. And so I think had I not have taken the traditional route, right now would be the crushing blow of everything I tried to do in life didn't work out, I think is what I would be feeling right now.
But again, quite encouragingly, it is, well, I guess there comes to a point where you've lived long enough to where it can really have damaging and long-lasting effects. But for the average American woman in college, or even some years even after that, it is never too late to turn it around at that point in your life, correct?
Oh, yes. And I tell this to women all the time online. I mean, I get women in their 40s, their 50s, their 60s, you know, coming around to the traditional way of thinking. And I say it's never too late. Just look at your life, do what you can do now, and forgive yourself for your past.
What a wonderful opening salvo to this hour, ladies and gentlemen. Fantastic opening segment with Ayla Stewart, wifewithapurpose.com, to encourage you even more. She's with us for the remainder of the hour. Stay tuned.
Abby Johnson was once director of a Planned Parenthood clinic in Bryan, Texas. After a moral crisis, she quit, and now she campaigns against what she once endorsed.
They implement abortion quotas in all of their clinics.
What do you mean, quotas?
You have to perform a certain number of abortions every month. One of the reasons that I left...
Are they explicit about that?
Yes. It's in your budget, right there on the line item. One of the reasons I left Planned Parenthood was because in a budget meeting, I was told to double that abortion quota. And for me, as someone who had spoken to the media and had said, you know, we're about reducing the number of abortions, we're about, you know, prevention, all of these other services, I was shocked.
So since you actually worked at a Planned Parenthood, give us some sense of the relative number of abortions.
Okay. Abortions, Planned Parenthood provides over 330,000 abortions a year. They are the largest single abortion provider in our country.
We'll be right back.
Each week, the political cesspool, known worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, hits the airwaves to bring you the other side of the news and to report on events which are vital to your welfare but are hushed up or distorted by the mainstream media. However, to continue doing this, we need your support. Go online at www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a safe and secure donation. If you prefer not to make an online donation, you can send us a check or money order to the address on the website. No matter which way you choose, the Political Cesspool needs your support. Go online to www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a donation today.
We fought, we learned, we struggled,
we won.
Despite Obama's best efforts, the newspaper of the human resistance survives. We have lived only to face a new nightmare, the war against the machines. Read about our struggle in The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The Sovereign is a 24-page monthly tabloid newspaper about the war between man and machines. We've tried reason, we've tried legislation. We've tried every peaceful means imaginable, and all it's gotten us is shut out. So now we fight the machines. Order online today at thesovnews.com or find The Sovereign at select newsstands. Remember to read The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. The human resistance's battle against the machines will be everlasting. This is mercy. It was never our destiny to stop the age of Obama. It was merely to survive it. Together. Together.
Searching, searching, every night and day, if we gotta keep on the run, follow the sun.
To get on the show and speak with James and the gang, call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. And now, back to tonight's show.
All right, welcome back. Our guest, Ayla Stewart, wifewithapurpose.com, and of course anybody who is articulate and has an ability to get these ideas out to a wide audience is going to come under attack, and so has she, quite famously, and I would ask her about that now. Ayla, your thoughts on being brought into the forefront with the New York Post story, Michael Savage, et cetera, et cetera. You were well covered not too long ago, and still, of course, to this day.
Yes. Well, I don't know much what to say about that other than I think that anyone listening to this show, I would assume we all are really familiar with the mainstream media and the lies and the narratives that they create. And I think this is something that I was aware of, that I've been aware of for a couple of decades, even when I was more liberal-minded and a feminist. I kind of grew up knowing that the news spins a story, but I really didn't know how bad it was until I got caught up as one of those stories. And what happened essentially was I had written a blog post on my website about a rap musician who considered himself a Christian, but didn't seem to reflect those Christian values, at least not in his social media. And I kind of wrote a warning to moms about this rapper artist and was called a racist for doing so. And I also had made a tongue-in-cheek comment on my Twitter regarding demographic decline within the white community worldwide, and issued this a white baby challenge following Representative Steve King's remarks about not being able to build your civilization with someone else's babies. And for people who kind of understood who my Twitter audience was, mostly nationalist-minded people who agreed with Steve King, this was obviously tongue-in-cheek, and I wasn't literally running any kind of challenge. I like to jokingly say there is no prize if you get to seven babies, because I had said in the tweet, match or beat me, because I had just had my sixth baby a few months before that. It was kind of a joke. It was in the spirit of the way that I ran my Twitter account, something that was meant mostly for my followers who would understand it, but it was picked up by the mainstream press, and they conflated these two events, which happened several weeks apart, and essentially spun the tale that I had encouraged white people to have babies in order to breed out black ghetto culture, because I had insulted, I suppose you could say, ghetto culture in the blog about rap music. And I had, you know, dared to point out that ghetto culture is not a good thing. And this isn't something we should encourage as mothers and as community members. And so that was used basically as one of those clickbait articles that you see at the end of other websites. And then it just went viral. It was, you know, in Salt Lake Tribune, New York Post, UK Daily Mail. And yeah, Michael Savage, you know, God bless him. You know, he saw the article. He saw my picture. He went to some of my social media and he says, I don't see it. I don't see how this woman is the horrible racist that they're trying to paint her as. You know, can somebody tell me how being a homemaker who's, you know, warning people about degenerate rap music is somehow a racist thing to do, or how is it racist to tell white people to have children, particularly if they're, you know, in decline? So I was grateful to him for speaking up on my behalf. But that was a really crazy experience. And then I've kind of made the press a few times since then. I never know quite what's going to catch their attention.
We can certainly relate to that, but I'll tell you, anybody that can walk through that fire and come back on the other side nothing but tempered, as you did, certainly is an instant member of the fraternity. Few people in this day and age can withstand that heat, and you did it quite remarkably well. And in doing some research in advance of your appearance tonight, I saw where I believe it was the Salt Lake Tribune who had asked you for an interview, and you said quite frankly, and quite candidly, I don't give interviews to the mainstream press, which I can relate to as well. So, but thank you for coming on this show tonight. It's been riveting so far, and of course, as you know, you are much stronger and much better for having maintained true to your stayed true to your beliefs and your principles, and. That is an example that you've now set for everyone else. But that's not to say that there hasn't been some price to pay, certainly. And we talked about this in the first hour tonight. The social ostracism, to some extent, they do try to get you at that. And then there's some other ancillary things. It's certainly not the sacrifice of blood and bone that our ancestors had to pay, but the indignity of being one of the first to be banned from Twitter as... what's the word I'm looking for? As trivial as that may be, you and Jared Taylor, and Jared has been a longtime friend of mine. I said he's such a gentleman, he makes Mr. Rogers look like Mick Jagger. And you, for you two to be among the first handful of people to be banned from Twitter was quite astonishing to me.
Yes, it was actually astonishing to me as well. You know, Twitter had changed its rules going back almost a year ago now. We kind of knew... it was coming. A lot of us that had been under scrutiny on the platform and had been in the press, and but we weren't sure who was going to get hit. And aside from a few jokes and maybe the occasional snarky remark when I was pregnant, I am really, really kind, and, you know, overly so in some respects on Twitter. And so I had never even had a timeout on Twitter except for one thing. They had had to dig back. Like literally a couple of years for a comment that I had made about an NFL player, and they had put me on a timeout for that about a year ago. And so coming up on this new rule change, I didn't suspect that I would necessarily be swept up first, and I really didn't expect Jared Taylor to as well, but they did de-verify me. That was the first thing they did, and that a lot of people don't understand why that's important. And just to express that briefly, when you're someone who's been in the press the way that I have, and you're still a normal person, you know, I'm not a Kardashian, I'm not a rock star, I'm not a famous person, I'm an average person, but I've been in the press. And I kind of fall in this weird middle ground. I don't have lawyers, I don't have managers, I don't have any of that. And so when you've been in the press the way I have, you need that Twitter verification, because people create fake accounts. They'll use your picture. Twitter does, of course, never takes these guys down or anything like that. And they create fake tweets. And I've even had some of my friends come to me and say, oh my gosh, I can't believe you tweeted this. I'm like, that's not me. And so that's a huge reason why we need verified accounts for people who've been in the media, which is the way Twitter used to run things. As long as you'd been in like three to five different publications, you could apply for a verified account. Anyways, I'd gone through the process. I'd qualified for one, but then they de-verified me, Richard Spencer, James Alsup, I believe, got de-verified at the same time, Laura Loomer, a bunch of us did. And then I believe it was about a month or so later, right before Christmas, I woke up. It was, I think, the 23rd or so of December. You know, my account was gone. No explanation, no email. You know, sometimes, you know, Gavin McGinnis was famously deplatformed recently from Twitter. He at least got an email. It was blank where it said the reason that they were suspending him, and they left it blank. But for me, I never even got an email. Of course, I appealed the decision. I never heard anything back. I was never able to get a hold of anyone, and they couldn't even tell me what tweet would have possibly triggered, you know, completely banning me from the platform, particularly when I had no history of even, you know, having issues before, having to remove tweets or anything like that. So it was quite surprising. And I don't think it was a coincidence that some of the people who make a very clear effort to treat people very kindly on social media, such as myself and Jared, were the first ones hit. It really played their hand. It showed their hand that this isn't about, you know, removing hate speech or anything like that. It is simply about deplatforming their most effective people. And people like Lauren Southern and other women in the movement are certainly wonderful. They can get up and they can talk about nationalism or any of these issues, conservative values. But I had the six kids behind me to back it up. I had the lifestyle. I had the husband. I had the marriage that was going on 2 decades. I had the homeschooling going on. I had, you know, I was legit. And that scared the heck out of them. And I don't think...
Ayla, hold on.
Sorry.
Sorry to interrupt. These commercial breaks are a cruel master, but we're going to pause it right there and pick up on some of the things you were just addressing as soon as we come back. Stay tuned, everybody.
Proclaiming liberty across the land. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
So, you two are real actors, huh?
Well, I was an extra on a soap opera for 3 years.
And I'm best known for starring in cat food commercials. Mm.
And you're going to play our parents for how long?
Oh, just during dinner for the next few years, probably until you're both off to college. Your real parents will be back every night at 8 o'clock.
8 o'clock?
Hey, your dad's busy. He's got work, softball, client functions.
Yeah, and your mom, she's got the literary club and play rehearsals. So.
Don't you worry. They'll be back on time.
Otherwise, we get time and a half.
Ka-ching! Okay, according to the script, we're supposed to ask you how your day was.
Yes.
Okay, I guess.
Ooh, is that the best you can do?
I think I want my real parents.
I don't see that in the script.
No ad-libbing, please.
There's no substitute for a loving parent. And when you're really there, you'll know how much you care. From the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. For more tips on strengthening your family, visit family.mormon.org.
Can a nation conceived in liberty carry its head high if it denies protection to the youngest and most vulnerable of its citizens? Can a country founded on God-given rights continue to thrive without understanding that life is a precious gift from our Creator? As a physician, I have looked into the eyes of 1-pound babies. I have cradled their small bodies in the palm of one hand. I defy those who are careless, who would disregard life and look at these tiny little miracles and say, we're not going to protect that.
But I believe there will come a time when we are all judged on whether or not we took a stand in defense of all life from the moment of conception until our last natural breath. One thing I promise you, I will always take a stand for life.
Are you a native son or daughter of the South who bleeds the stars and bars? Someone not born in Dixieland, but who is a Johnny Reb at heart and looking for a place to shop that promotes Southern heritage? Well, your search is over. Dixie Republic is the place to go for all things celebrating the Confederacy and promoting Southern pride. Inside the log cabin just outside Travelers Rest, South Carolina, Dixie Republic has t-shirts, hats, videos, flags, books, belt buckles, and some of the best mouth-watering barbecue sauce that will ever touch your lips. There's just about everything you want honoring the South at Dixie Republic. Well, you say that South Carolina's a bit too far for you to drive? Have no fear, my friend. All of this is just a mouse click away. Go online at www.dixierepublic.com. You're home for all things celebrating the Confederacy and promoting Southern pride.
Oh yeah, oh, wanna be by-
It's time to jump back into the political cesspool. To be part of the show and have your voice heard around the world, call us at 1-866-986-6397.
Okay, folks, Ayla Stewart, our guest, whyforthepurpose.com. That's a website that I'm at this very second. And I'm going to ask her one more question that I'd like to give her all the time she needs to answer. And then I'd like to do a sort of transition into a more rapid fire session to round out the hour. But as you know, of course, Ayla, a year ago, it's the one-year anniversary of Charlottesville, the Unite the Right rally. I see a post you put up, published just a couple of days ago. And it's entitled, "As the Media Begins Its Blitzkrieg of Lies About Charlottesville, Remember to Forgive." And that's something that I would encourage everyone to read. But one thing that our listeners may not know, because it wasn't as publicized as some of the other aspects of Charlottesville, was that you were one of the intended speakers at the Unite the Right rally, the original one that got scuttled, of course, for reasons we well know on this show. The collusion of law enforcement and the government of the state of Virginia to turn that situation into a tinderbox, a powder keg. You were actually going to be one of the speakers there, if my notes are correct. I'd like you to talk about that and to tell us what your talk at that event would have been about had our people had the right to freedom of speech and assembly that day.
Yeah, so that was kind of a crazy happenstance. I had messaged Richard Spencer and let him know that I was going to be in the area during the Unite the Right, the original one, and he had asked me to speak. I hadn't expected him to do that. I had been on his show before, on his YouTube, Thursday night YouTube show, and I messaged him, "Hey, I'm going to be there," because I lived on the West Coast, but I happened to be in that area at the time visiting family, and I said, "Oh, look, this is a coincidence. I'll be there." And this is back when we thought it was going to still be a very small thing. He asked me to speak. I said, "Sure." I prayed about it, and I decided to speak on the family and the importance of the family. And that was it. My speech was not even really race-based or anything like that. It was just about, you know, the traditional family. And I had planned to attend. My family and I got a hotel room the night before, about 45 minutes outside of Charlottesville. And the personal security detail of Richard Spencer, he was loaning them to me, so that I could be safe during the event. But they had kind of cased the area the night before and said, "Look, I don't think that we can have a woman speaker. We can't guarantee your safety. We just really don't feel okay with it, because this is a really this could be a very intense situation." And they really made a wonderful decision. I'm very grateful to them. So I ended up not attending the rally. In fact, my family and I, we met up with a friend of mine and went to an Amish bakery about one town over instead. And so I did not end up being at the rally, but that is how I came to be involved with that.
Well, that's very interesting. Now, had it gone according to plan, had it been gone off without a hitch, if you had delivered a talk, what was your talk going to be about?
It was going to be about children and the future of our country, how each child deserves a wife and a mother. Each child deserves a mother and a father, and how important that is for the development of children, and that the family is the building block of society. And we won't have a strong society. We can't return to a strong society until we return to a strong family. And part of a strong family is not only do we have a mother and a father, but that they have complementary roles, in that not both of them are out there in the working world trying to earn as much money as possible while shoving the kids in someone else's care. That mom is home, she's tending to the children, dad is out earning the money and paying the bills, and that they're working together in their God-given roles to raise the children in a healthy way that will really send some strong people into the world that can stand for what's right again, instead of the sick people that we have in our world today who've been raised in these very, very dysfunctional families.
Well, that's certainly talk I would have enjoyed hearing had rule of law prevailed that day. Now, Ayla, let me ask you this. You have written, I believe, and you can correct me, of course, if I'm wrong, that it was your faith that led you into, for lack of a better term, pro-white activism. Now, this show, of course, we're 14 years on the air now, and we were very pioneering in terms of not being just a media outlet, but on the AM radio, no less, that is presenting a pro-white point of view. But I don't have focus groups. I don't put my finger in the air and try to judge what people want to hear us talk about. This show is going to take on my personality, and that personality is equal parts pro-white, pro-Southern, pro-Christian, and not necessarily in that order, but those are the things that we're big on here, and so we have our audience, and that's what we stick with. Talk about the importance of faith in our quote-unquote movement, and I believe, if I'm not mistaken, you are LDS. Were you raised LDS? You can answer all of those questions at once.
I keep my specific denomination private. So, but I was not raised LDS. No. And to answer that question, it was my Christian faith that led me to pro-white activism. I had stumbled across some pro-white information on the internet at one point several years back, and I at first was sort of repulsed by it. I had this like, oh my goodness, you're not supposed to say that, you know, sort of reaction to what I was reading. But then I had to be very honest with myself and say, well, wait a minute, why would I have that reaction? The information I'm getting isn't bad, it's not supremacist or anything, it's just pro-white, and you know, there's nothing wrong with white people. And it was kind of this light bulb in my mind situation that I didn't realize how ingrained, you know, anti-white thought had been in just the public school upbringing and everything I had. And I had never really considered myself anti-white. And I loved European history and so forth. So, you know, it just was this moment that I had to go, well, wait a minute, God created us. You know, I read the Bible, it tells you he set us in our nations, and he set our habitation and where we are and where we're living. And I thought, well, God loves all of us, and he loves all the beautiful races that he's created. And I used to be very involved in the Free Tibet movement back when I was more liberal and feminist. And the same principles that apply to Tibet, I apply to white people. So when Tibet is being overrun by the Chinese and being outbred and their culture is being suppressed and eradicated, I was against that. And when I saw the refugee crisis in Europe, as well as the illegal immigration going on in America, and the mass dumping of refugees here as well, and seeing our culture just completely disappear. And again, I grew up in the Southwest, so I was born in, you know, I was raised in a time when it was still majority white, very quickly changed, the culture changed, the language changed, everything changed throughout that area. So I had a lot of firsthand knowledge of how quickly things could change and how quickly a culture could die out. And I became incredibly concerned seeing as how there didn't seem to be any white country on earth that wasn't being completely erased culturally and ethnically. And so I thought, you know, it just made sense to me as a Christian that God would not want that. God would not want one of his beautiful creations to die out that way. And what's more, the more I got into it, I noticed how much hatred there was for white people and how common it was. Not just that it was out there on the fringes, but that it was in our institutions. It was right there. It wasn't just even in the schools, but it is. It's on all, you know, the internet platforms, as we've seen them deplatforming anyone who's pro-white, et cetera. And I really saw the absolute hate speech really against white people and how that was considered completely okay. And I thought, this isn't how God would have us act. God would not have all non-whites ganging up in a country or on the internet claiming that white people were, you know, evil, the start of all our problems, blah, 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 blah. That was not a Christian way to act. And so that was one of the reasons I felt I needed to speak out about it.
Well, I appreciate that. And of course, I can't separate my faith from my activism, just as you have most eloquently stated, you can't either. And I think honest people do come to that conclusion. Unfortunately, we have many dishonest people in churches, and this is cross-denominational. It's Baptist, it's Southern Baptist, it's Episcopalian, it's Catholic, it's Mormon, it's across the board. I know you're familiar with my episode this summer in which my pastor was pressured to expel me as a member of the church. And when he didn't, they expelled our entire church from fellowship with the Southern Baptist Convention. And I have received now just from our producer, Church of Latter-day Saints has released something in on the anniversary of Charlottesville. White supremacist attitudes are morally wrong and sinful, and we condemn them. Church members who promote or pursue a white culture are not in harmony with the teachings of the church. So right there you have, once again, churches of many denominations equating the support and the defense of white culture as white supremacy. Maybe we'll ask you about that when we come back, but I got several more things we need to talk to you about, and only one segment to do it in. We'll do it as quickly as we can right after this.
Liberty News Radio Network.
As a parent, is receiving a faith-based, character-focused education for your children difficult to find? Do you believe that godly principles should be a central component in your child's education? Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character. For over 40 years, American Heritage School has been educating both hearts and minds, bringing out academic excellence. This is the school where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. With American Heritage School's Advanced Distance Education Program, distance is no longer an issue. With an accredited LDS-oriented curriculum from kindergarten through 12th grade, your children can attend from anywhere in the world. American Heritage School will prepare your child for more than a job. It will prepare them for life. To learn more, visit American-Heritage.org. That's American-Heritage.org.
Liberty is not free. Its costs are innumerable. Without monetary funding, the valiant efforts of freedom-loving Americans become diminished or outright defeated. We present a solution, the Give Me Liberty Fund. The plan is quite simple. Invite individual Americans to contribute less than a dollar a day. These monetary funds are used to promote liberty-minded media, organizations, events, candidates, movements, and speakers. In the spirit of transparency, all expenditures are published. Patriotic business owners provide discounted products and services to Give Me Liberty Fund members. Our greatest strength is in numbers. Go to GiveMeLibertyFund.com and become part of the solution today. GiveMeLibertyFund.com. Participate in the peaceful restoration of the greatest and freest country in the world.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I ask you, what is the KQ? You know, the kosher question. Most Americans will spend their entire lifetime purchasing food from the supermarkets while having no idea that almost every packaged food product on the grocery shelves is certified kosher. Indeed, the kosher question encompasses not only food and religion, but also affects our economics, politics, and our identity. In an effort to promote awareness to the kosher question, developers have published an app for your smartphone that features a database of food products that have not been kosher certified. The Kosher-tified app has prominent advertisement on TPC's homepage, or you can check out its website at thekosherquestion.com. With the cesspool of politics getting even deeper these days, why not leave the swamp and start eating in favor of your own interests? Check out thekosherquestion.com today and download the app.
Welcome back. To get on the show, call us on James's Dime at 1-866-986-6397.
Of course, when you surround yourself with talent, time flies by all too quickly, and certainly that has been the case this hour with Ayla Stewart, our guest, wifewithapurpose.com. I appreciate her work. I appreciate her courageous and righteous, I may add, stand, and hope that you will support her as well. Ayla, we've got about 10 minutes remaining, and I've got five questions. So this is going to be a rapid fire, maybe 2 minutes apiece if you can. But okay. I would add just a quick follow-up to what we were talking about before the break. What is a sincere and ardent Christian to do, a Christian that is also racially conscious and a Christian who is not embarrassed of his ancestors, a Christian who does not hate himself or herself? What is he to do with the apostasy that has infected the head tables of our respective denominations? What does that Christian do in this day and age?
Well, that's going to look different for every person and their situation and their church and their denomination, but they have to do something. And I think that that's the most important thing. And that something is not to abandon church or Christianity. It might mean going to a different church, and I don't mean necessarily a different denomination, but a different building or whatever it is. But we do need to make a stand, and we need to make sure that they don't kick us out, that they don't make it so that we retreat from the churches. We need to make sure that God's word is preached in full in our churches, and we need to stay within those communities, even when it means a lot of personal sacrifice and, quite frankly, embarrassment for ourselves.
I agree with you 100%. There is no way that we are going to reclaim America's destiny. There is no way that our people are going to rise again without Jesus Christ. And I believe that to the very marrow of my bones. Our faith has, you look at Eastern Europe that is seeing a resurgence in Christianity, and they are rising. The rest of the West, which has embraced decadence and degeneracy, and we are falling. This post-Christian America is falling. Faith is at the center of it all, folks. We cannot abandon the faith of our fathers. Now, Ayla, your thoughts on homeschooling?
Love it. It's pretty much the only way to go, unless you happen to live really close to an amazing private school that will teach history accurately. Everyone should be homeschooling their children. It is easier now than ever before, and you can do it for pennies a day. And there's really no excuse. No one is too dumb. No one is too poor. Everyone has the time, and you really can do it. And I encourage everyone to do it because our future depends on it.
I agree, and I know it's easy to agree with people in theory and not in practice, but I also agree with our guest this hour in practice. We have two children, an embarrassment compared to the spoils of riches that Ayla has with six, but we have two, and we homeschool them, and we're all the better for it. In fact, of course, I left a private Christian school, which was a very fine school and very expensive, and we homeschooled my last 3 years, and that really began my journey into political activism with the Buchanan campaign and my own run for office, which led into radio. It's a broken door of opportunity, or rather a broken road of opportunities. You got to be looking for those open doors. But for me, it started with homeschooling, certainly. Women's roles in political activism. I can certainly have an opinion, but with regards to women's roles in political activism, it's nice to hear it from an actual woman. So, Ayla, your thoughts on that?
Well, again, I think that depends on the women, or the woman herself. Each of us is going to be different. But essentially, I think that we women need to back off from trying to influence policy decisions. That really needs to be up to the man or to the men in our society. We need to be making sure that we're providing a foundation at home to encourage our men in their leadership roles and in their godly roles as leaders of our families and leaders of our nations. And then, of course, there's always room, I think, for kind of the trad life, role model, and that's something that I tried to do, which is keep a mommy blog or have an Instagram, have a Twitter account, and share with men and women what it means to be a traditional homemaker in order to encourage and support them. And that doesn't mean women can't have an opinion on politics. I certainly have one myself, but my main goal as a woman is to encourage the male leadership in my community and in my nation.
Excuse me. No, I agree. And that leads me into the very next question. It's a perfect entry into my next question. And that would be, what encouragement for young people, or really for people of any age, that may be looking and or certainly should be looking for a trad wife or trad husband? Now, it's easy, of course, to say you meet them in church. And certainly I did. I've shared this story so many times over the course of my career, and it's a story that I enjoy telling, and any opportunity to share it is one that I am welcome to receive. But I met my wife when she was 15. I met my wife at church when she was 15 years old, and we've been together ever since. And I think there was an article that came out. I don't remember the exact title of it, but the gist was men want a virgin with no tattoos and no debt, and that set off quite a bit of a furor in the establishment press here the last few days. But to circle back, Ayla, your encouragement for young people looking for a trad spouse?
Well, I'll say, just for essence of time, I'll give this from the male perspective, but this applies to women as well. So if you're a man and you're looking for a trad wife, definitely you need to be involved in your church community. But don't be afraid to meet her father or her brother or her cousin first. That is to say, get out there and make friendships, not just with women, but make friendships with other men who share your values, because you might meet a man, you might go hunting, you might get to talking or whatever it is, golfing, whatever you do, and he might say, hey, I've got a sister. She just turned 19, 20. She's looking for a traditional husband. So you have to get out there in general, be talking to people who share your values, be involved with your community. It's a way to stay healthy in your single years anyways, and you will definitely meet somebody maybe through a family member or a friend that way.
Well, if you don't mind, and I don't want to get too personal, but certainly you appear to have a very well-rounded and sturdy family. I would certainly assume that your husband is supportive of your activism, which has, of course, become very publicly well-known. What's the dynamic there?
Oh, yeah, 100%. When I started my Twitter account, it was just, you know, a very small thing. Once I saw that I was getting attention and that I was getting a large following, I went to my husband immediately and I said, are you okay with this? These are the things I want to talk about. And he shares my values. And so it was an easy yes for him, because he realized that I was in a position where I could speak well. People were listening to me for whatever reason. I still wonder why. And they, you know, he couldn't perform that same duty. And he was very happy to have me be able to do that, since I had the platform for it. And every step that I've made in my activism and on my online work, I always check in with him first and let him know, like, this is what I want to do. How do you feel about this? Or I want to stop doing this, or I want to, you know, whatever it is, I will always check in with him first and get his A-okay.
I was much pilloried in the media in 16 for many, many reasons, one of which was the fact that I said, well, for one reason, Hillary's not suitable to be the president. It's because the faith that I adhere to says the woman shouldn't be the head of the household, much less the head of the country, or our national household, if you will. But I do think it's very important that we have articulate, intelligent women such as yourself speaking out in favor of solutions that are healthy, and a word I like to go back to a lot, quite natural and righteous. And people need to know that there are women on board with this plan as well, that it's not their men. The men are not keeping all the women under their foot. Women also gravitate to that which is holy and pure and true. And I'm sure that's, of course, the reasons you gravitated to your findings, certainly not for political or financial gain. Although that could have been a road you pursued as well. It could have been a road you pursued as well, because you had a pretty interesting major and minor. You were quite an educated person coming out of college. And I think all of this, your story, your tete-a-tete with the media, all of it that we've covered tonight, and I think we've done a pretty good job of giving our audience a little snapshot of who you are and what you're about. Any prospects of a book forthcoming?
I would love to. I actually started writing one more than a year ago. I had a Patreon up to support it, and that Patreon lasted about a month before I was banned from the platform, and I haven't quite figured out how to work it yet. Obviously, homeschooling and with six kids, I do need some finances in order to be able to write a book, because I have to be able to, you know, arrange a little bit of childcare a few hours a week or something. There has to be a balance there. And so without the financial backing that I was receiving from Patreon, I haven't been able to move forward as rapidly with that as I would like, but it is definitely on my to-do list, and it's at the top of my to-do list, and I hope to get something out. In the meantime, I have been doing little educational packets that are about 8 to 10 pages long for homeschooling, and I sell those on my Etsy account. If you go to Etsy, Wife with a Purpose, then you can find, I've written two of those already and have plans to write more, just so I can get little bits of information out there at a time in the meantime, in between, you know, before I can write a full book.
Well, we'll look forward to it. And I want to thank you, Ayla, tonight, wifewithapurpose.com, for making yourself available. I know live radio on Saturday night of all nights is not the best time for a family woman such as yourself. And so I also want to thank your husband and your children for making you available to us this evening. With only seconds remaining, is there anything we haven't covered tonight that you'd like to convey to the audience?
Jesus is the way. And he's gonna save our people. It's the only way is with Christ in our lives and with Christ in our nation and Christ in our hearts.
Amen. And I appreciate you saving the most important statement for the last. And that was it. Ayla, I look forward to having you back on this program. I look forward to future collaborations with you. Thank you for all you're doing.
Thank you so much.
Good night. Thank you. We'll be back with the third hour with Eddie the Bombardier Miller right after this.
But don't go away. There's more to come right here on the Liberty News Radio Network.